John Francis, and I think he'll talk about the geometry.
Thank you very much. Thanks to the organizers for the invitation to speak. Sorry, my abstract's a little late, but I'm going to get it to you. thanks to the Fields Institute for supporting this conference. So it's also a pleasure to be in the lineup with Mike Hill and Andre Enriquez, who are my pals from grad school. So what I want to talk about is not EM geometry, but close. What I want to talk about is an application of derived algebraic geometry to EM algebra. So the words are mostly right, but the focus will be a little bit different. So EM algebra was talked about at in some detail by Mike Mandel in his talk, and Andre mentioned it briefly just a moment ago when he put E2 on the board, sort of near the end. And this, sort of the notion, let me recall it briefly, the notion is that sometimes, something a little bit different than associative or commutative allows you to parameterize some multiplication on an object. So an EN algebra in some category C, where it makes sense to talk about a space of maps between things, has the structure, a family of multiplications, let's say A in C, has the structure of a family of multiplications for each finite set I. Parameterized by the space of framed embeddings of a disjoint union of disks indexed by I into a standard disk. So we have a map from here to A tensored with itself, I times to A. So what this space right here is also known as the ith space of the EN operad. So this this sort of subject originated, I guess, back in the 60s, 70s, because an obvious collection of spaces have this kind of a structure, n-fold loop spaces. So I guess the original idea of these operads was Boardman and Vogt, so I believe this theorem is due to Peter May, that the theory of n-fold loop spaces sits inside the theory of these EN algebras in the category of spaces. And the essential image of this, up to homotopy, is characterized by those EN algebras and spaces for which pi 0 is a group. So this is, in some sense, the one of the sort of essential features of the EN algebras. N-fold loop spaces, they're a little bit more commutative than just loop spaces, where pi 0 can only need to be associative but not commutative. But they're not, as commutative as, say, infinite loop spaces. So because there are this wealth of examples, that gave the theory some push, and it kind of also suggests one of the most essential features of the theory in algebras, because we can rewrite n-fold loop spaces as being loop objects, and loop objects in loop spaces, where I wrote loop n times. In other words, an n-fold loop space is the same thing, or let's say a double loop space is the same thing as a loop object in loop spaces. And so similarly, the theory of the homotopy theory of EN algebras is equivalent to the theory of E1 algebras in E1 algebras, in E1 algebras in spaces. So something like this was, probably this basic idea was, known to Boardman or Vogt back at the beginning, intuitively, though the first result I know of along these lines is due to Dunn, and fancier versions have appeared over the last 10 years due to a lot of other people. So I know Jacob Lurie proves a precise result along these lines. I know Clark Barwick also has a result along these lines, and, you know, a lot of other people. I know Joyal, Fyodorovich. There's sort of a lot of people who have results that look a lot like this. So this is something sort of really essential to the way this theory behaves. Sort of an N algebra structure is like N different, you know, commuting E1 algebra structures that agree with each other, you know, in some coherent way. So this is one essential feature of the theory. Another essential feature is that if you have an E n algebra, and let's say in a category C, which is like chain complexes or spectra, then you have a map, say like this, and this space right here is homotopy equivalency n minus 1 sphere, and so this gives you a map which changes degree by n minus 1. And so when C is like, say, spectra or chain complexes, this gives, you know, let's say the homotopy groups of A shifted by n minus 1 a Lie algebra structure. So this, I believe, is a result of Fred Cohen. And if you just generally look at all the homotopy groups, well, it has a commutative algebra structure, you know, in pi 0, and it has the shifted Lie algebra structure, and those two things fit together by the same rules as govern that of a Poisson algebra. So these are kind of two really basic features of the theory of EN algebras. They're sort of more commutative in this sense, and they kind of have a part which is like a Lie algebra and a part which is like a commutative algebra at the level of homotopy theory, and they agree in some you know way. All right, so although these were kind of introduced to study n-fold loop spaces, you know, that sort of gave it the theory a big push, but I'd say what gave it kind of a significantly bigger push later in the 80s was when it was sort of found that these kinds of structures were really inherent in topological field theories. So let me just say briefly that if you have a topological field theory, so some kind of a functor from a category of n manifolds where the bordisms are n plus 1 manifolds to some topological category C, and this is, you know, monoidal, and disjoint union is sent to tensor product, then one thing you immediately get is that the value of F on the n-sphere has the structure of an En plus 1 algebra in C. So, for instance, you know, Andre was talking about like representations of the loop group in the last lecture, and one thing that you learn when you learn a little bit about that is that it forms a braided tensor category, and one sort of way of interpreting that is it's part of a field theory, and it's the value on the one sphere in that field theory, and so therefore it's an E2 algebra in categories, which is a braided tensor category. So another part is, you know, if this had some, maybe some extra structure, like this would say open and closed or extended or something like that, then it might also make sense to talk about the value of F on the N disk. And then this would have the structure of an EN algebra. And so I just mentioned these briefly to sort of suggest that this theory kind of has a lot of juice and sort of contemporary interest from a rather different source than the kind of originating example of loop spaces. All right, so now Andre started his talk with by giving a pretty trivial piece of algebra. So I like that, so I also want to give a trivial piece of algebra. So let A now be an associative algebra. So what are some things you can do with an associative algebra? Well, one thing you can do is you can consider associative algebra derivations from A into itself. So these are some maps, you know, well, we know what a derivation is. It's a map from A to A, and if we evaluate it on a product of two things, then, you know, we can write this as A dB plus d A, B. So it satisfies the basic rule of a derivation. So now, The other thing we know is that there's a map from A to this thing, which just sends an element in A to the commutator bracket. And we know something about this map because, we know something about this map. We know that some things go to zero. Well, what things go to zero? Things whose commutator bracket is always zero. So this has a name. It's something that sits inside A. This is the center of A. And we know something else about this map. We know that, you know, this maps to something such that that's zero. This is maybe we could call something like outer derivations from A to A. So this is a kind of trivial piece of algebra, but, you know, I really like it. And I guess Quillen also looked at this kind of trivial piece of algebra, and he, I think, noticed some things that are kind of cool. So what he noticed was that a bunch of these things are homotopy groups of some things. He noticed probably, at least I'm channeling Quill, and I assume that this is what he noticed. He noticed that this thing right here was the zeroth Hochschild cohomology of A. He noticed that this thing right here was the first Hochschild cohomology group of A. And since he was in the process of constructing Andre Quillen cohomology, I was aware at the same time that this was also the zero homotopy group of, well, let me call it TE1 of A, sort of the E1 tangent complex, also known as Andre Quillen, the associative algebra Andre Quillen cohomology of A. So this was very suggestive, and so A, given that A is discrete, is pi zero of itself. So this is now very suggestive. And so he went from this trivial piece of algebra to a, I'd say, less trivial piece of homological algebra. And so he proved that these groups arose from the homotopy groups of a homotopy fiber sequence of, you know, complexes or spectra or whatever. So there is a homotopy fiber sequence from, let me write it this way, A going to the E1 tangent complex of A going to the suspension by 1 of the Hochschild cohomology of A for any A an E1 algebra. So in particular, any associative algebra. Or, you know, a DGA or something. So that, so you pass to pi zero of this homotopy fiber sequence, and at the beginning you recover that sequence right there. So, I don't know. I liked that. I thought it was cool. And I like EN algebra. And so I was thinking about, well, I mean, I guess I naturally thought about what the analog of this for EN was, and actually, I guess, maybe for a different motivation or something, Kontsevich was also thinking about what the analog of this for an EN algebra was, and so I guess around 10 years ago, he made a proposal, which is basically to put N anywhere where there's a 1, yes. yes. So, but, all right, so let's, so have the, he made the, this following proposal. Let me call this a theorem. It was first proposed by Kontsevich. So A is really A shifted by 1 minus 1. So, and only the first one counts. So A gets shifted by N minus 1. Sorry. Well, there's no 1s in T of A. So I'll write, just keep that the same. Ah, but there's a 1 right there, so I want it to be an N. So this maps to the EN Hochschild cohomology of A, suspended n times. So for A, and EN algebra. In C, where C is again, let's say that C is like, just to have some generality but not excessive generality, it's modules over K, where K is any E infinity ring spectrum, any K in E infinity ring spectra, or you could just let it be chain complexes. This is also an interesting statement in chain complexes. Then where this is the EN tangent complex. Complex is a little misleading because it's now a spectrum, but this is the nth suspension of the EN Hochschild cohomology, and this is then just the N minus first suspension of A. So this is the, you know, well, Andre in his talk now talks about something very grand after his piece of algebra. I just want to continue talking about this sort of trivial piece of algebra in this maybe just slightly less trivial context. So this is the sort of subject I'd like to talk about today. This and kind of why it's true. So I proved this in my thesis, but I didn't prove it very well. So I boiled it down to the case where A is a free EN algebra, and then in that case you boil it down to some weird splittings of configuration spaces that, you know, go back to like Deuce and McDuff in like the 70s, my advisor told me. And so we kind of proved it, but without really giving a reason why it was true. So later on, I wanted to graduate. I knew it wasn't an ideal proof, but you know, it was time to move along. So I wrote it up, and sort of later on, we were kind of making use of this result in some work with Kevin Costlow and David Nadler, and it was just sort of clear that it kind of meant more than kind of I'd figured out. And so I want to talk about the sort of better proof that is more meaningful. Oh, and also I guess I came up with it, and then I was really excited to tell. To tell Jacob Lurie it, and he also came up with it. So one reference is on my website. It's the only paper that could possibly be this. It has something about EN algebras in the title. And the other reference for a very sort of similar treatment, he doesn't say things in exactly the same way, is Lurie's paper, DAG 6, or and me. Oh, it is. No, I looked at that paper. There's something very similar in that paper, but it's not for a unital EN algebra. It's for an augmented EN algebra, and I believe it's the infinitesimal version. So if you base change this result over the augmentation, then you get something which is very similar. So there's a very similar result, and so that result is a consequence of this one. So Poe, who's has a paper also, where we have sort of string topology is in the title. So that's in characteristic zero, and it's an infinitesimal, an augmented version of this statement. So it's, okay, so what is, so let me first, I just said write n where one occurred, but let me actually now sort of say maybe a little more precisely what these objects actually are. One way of saying what the usual Hochschild homology, or let me call it E1 Hochschild homology, is that this is, you know, some derived mapping object in the category of E1 modules, which is equivalent to bimodules from A to A. So whenever you have an operad, you have a notion of a module for that operadic algebra. And so whatever that means, well, it should mean that there's some space. So for M in this category, there's a map like this. Well, this is homotopy equivalent just to S0, so that means that up to homotopy you have two maps, and that's the same kind of structure as a bimodule, and so these things are equivalent concepts. Like, all right. So if I wanted the N version, I'm just changing 1 to n, so I've got an n there, an n here, and this is no longer bimodules, but I have an n here, and this becomes n minus 1, and so now whatever the notion of an en module is, clearly it's something where I have something like a left module action, but now I have a family of them parameterized by the n minus 1 sphere. So this is a good category. A is an object in this category, since we have maps like this when M is A. And so we can define the EN Hochschild cohomology. One way of getting what that is as this mapping object in C. So there's one piece. Now here I want an EN tangent complex. Well, so Quillen's sort of original definition of this tangent complex, or Andre Quillen cohomology, was as some sort of derived, R-derived, mapping object from A into A. So one way of thinking about this is this sort of, we can think about this as like E1 algebras over A, and I'm mapping A into a split square zero extension of A by A. So A adjoin epsilon, and then I quotient out by epsilon squared. So this description right here, if you sort of just, you know, if you make this algebras, you can, if you see what a map like this is, then it's identity on this factor, and then whatever map from A to the second factor is exactly the data of a derivation. And now this definition generalizes. I could put any operad there, and so let me put for A an EN algebra, I'll define it as this, EN version of Andre Quillen cohomology, and so I'll just put an N there also. And I think that probably this sort of do this in spectra and in this general context probably was first done by Maria Bastera, and there's sort of work more along these lines of Bastera and Mandel. Okay, so now. We've got a good notion of the tangent complex, not a complex, a spectrum or something. We have a notion of Hochschild cohomology suited. And so now we can, at least the statement makes sense. Unfortunately, I haven't given you any reason to suspect why the statement would be true. I proved it without really knowing why it was true. So, but one thing that we could, that you can kind of maybe start to guess is that some things look like Lie algebras. So this thing right here, I remember we said that the homotopy groups of A shifted by n minus 1, remember mentioning was a theorem of Fred Cohen, that this is a Lie algebra. So this thing right here, it kind of looks like the object that's the Lie algebra, but just without passing the homotopy groups. So this is a Lie algebra. But this thing right here, this is like derivations, and derivations are supposed to form a Lie algebra too. So this also looks like a Lie algebra. And if you're familiar with the higher dimensional Deligne conjecture, proven by a whole bunch of people like Lurie, Hu, Kris, Voronoff, Kevin Costello has a student that proved it. What's his name? Justin Thomas. So, which has been proved recently by a number of different people and others, then actually this is an EN plus 1 algebra, but I shifted by N, and so this also looks like a Lie algebra. So all of these things look like Lie algebras. And in fact, Kuntsevich's original conjecture was that this was of Lie algebras. I just ignored that when I wrote it in my thesis, that I proved Kuntsevich's conjecture. I didn't, I guess. So all of these look like Lie algebras, but the problem is, at least to me, Lie algebras are not very intuitive. I can remember the definition, but what are intuitive, however, are groups. Now that I feel like I have some intuition for. So if we were to take the fact that these are Lie algebras, maybe there's something which I have much more intuition for that are true for groups. And then we could just get it by passing to their Lie algebras. And maybe that's something which is actually intuitive. Yes. Oh, yeah. So it, from the way I've written it, it's not even clear that there's a map. And when I proved it, like in my thesis, like, we constructed the map by some universal arguments involving some functors having to preserve co-limits, and you could do it on free algebras. And so I haven't given you any reason why there are even maps between these two things. But we'll get there. All right, so here's an idea. So the idea is that if we have an algebraic group, we can take the tangent complex, or the tangent space, sorry, at the identity point, and this gives us a Lie algebra. Now here, what we're not really dealing with Lie algebras, I mean, all this is over spectra. So we kind of have a category of, you know, a category of derived Lie algebras. So for those of you who this makes sense, you know, it's not the Lie apparat, it's some refinement in spectra of the Lie apparat that exists because of like Aron Mohowald and, you know, Michael Shing's thesis and stuff like that. And then there's some other structure here, like these are really restricted Lie algebras and stuff like that. These are too. Anyhow, so there's something like that, but anyhow, it's the case that if you pass to pi 0, you get Lie algebras. And so what we would like is something where it also makes sense to take the tangent complex of something at the identity, get a Lie algebra, and this kind of bears the same relation that pi 0 is an algebraic group. And so, I mean, I wrote derived here, so I'll just write derived again. Derived algebraic groups. Okay, so let's, and so here I have a sequence of you know, what we believe to be in a sequence of Lie algebras, so let's find a sequence of derived algebraic groups. So find a fiber sequence of derived algebraic groups such that when you pass to the Lie algebras gives this sequence right here. Okay, so, well, in order to give you a sequence of derived algebraic groups, well, I need to give you at least one. So let's, I should also probably give you a definition. So let's do that. So this will be the weakest definition possible for our purposes here. Let's take the following, you know, definition, which is good enough for today, though if you had some really sophisticated purposes in mind, probably not good enough. So for fixing C, again, so the category of modules over some E infinity ring spectrum, so we want some notion of an algebraic group over C. So G, such an algebraic group will consist of a functor from our category of E infinity algebras in C. G will be a functor to topological groups, or as I prefer, you know, as we might think of them instead, loop spaces, either one, you know, or any model for that category right here. So it's a group object in space-valued functors of E infinity algebras in C. So this is not very sophisticated because I made no mention in topology, and if we had more other purposes in mind that were more geometric, I would want to put some topology in an atile topology, flat topology, whatever it is. However, the reason we don't really need it for our purposes is we're really looking at something that happens at a point. So no need to be any fancier than this. All right, so here's our provisional definition. Topological groups or loop spaces. Just whatever you like. It's equivalent to topological groups. No. I just mean loop spaces. Yeah. All All right, so what's an example? All right, so earlier in the week, you know, there was a lot of discussion of units, and so the notion of the units fit very well into this discussion. So what's an example? So let A now be an EN algebra in C. So now I want to note that I have a functor from EN algebras in C to EN algebras in spaces. And it's just take the underlying space. So it sends some A here to just maps in C from the unit, let me call that K, into A. So this is a spectrum. It's the zero space of the spectrum. And now, given an EN algebra in spaces, I can get rid of any elements that aren't invertible. So let me call that functor GL1. And so that lands me in group-like EN algebras. Let me just call them loop and fold loop spaces. Now, I put loop spaces over here, and these are n-fold loop spaces, so I don't need all but one of those n. So let me just de-loop this n minus 1 times to get a loop space. Okay, so now I have a functor from EN algebras to loop spaces, and so now I will define I will give an example of an algebraic group. So let me call this this example G equal to BN minus 1 of A units, and so this will be defined. This will be defined by sending an E infinity algebra in C to the loop space, which is, let's call this R, and this goes to B n minus 1 of GL1 of R tensored over K smash whatever it is with A. So I base change, I pass to this this underlying space, and then I do the E loop n minus 1 times. So this is actually a kind of nice notion of the units, because sort of there was some discussion earlier about how do you make the units of a ring detect the difference between the spectrum and its connective version, because just the underlying space right here only sees the connective part. But if you view it as an algebraic group, then it knows the difference, because you just smash with something else, something in negative degrees goes up into positive degrees, and now it knows the difference between the two. So view it as an algebraic group, some EN ring spectrum or EN infinity ring spectrum and its connective cover don't have the same algebraic group of units. So it's sort of, there's a lot of data there. It's something interesting. All right, so this is one seems perfectly nice example of a derived algebraic group. Give another example. So again, let's let A be, as before, an EN algebra. So now I want to consider automorphisms of A, and I'm just using the fact that you can base change automorphisms. So the derived algebraic group G will be aught of A, and this will land in loop spaces. And what this sends is, given some E infinity algebra R, I'm going to send this to the space of maps in E infinity algebras in R modules in C, from R tensored with A to R tensored with A, but I'm going to restrict to those which are homotopy equivalences. So the subspace, the full full-on components of those which are homotopy equivalences. So that, I can compose, so this forms a loop space, I can compose so it forms an E1 algebra, and I restrict it to ones that are homotopy equivalences, so it's group-like. So this gives me another perfectly good example of a derived algebraic group. Are there any questions so far? All right, so I'm going to give one more example because I got to give at least three. And this last example, I'm afraid I'm going to, the classical group of automorphisms. These are not necessarily nice groups, you know. Like, if A is big, then this could be, like, totally wild and huge. You know, like, this could be a functor that doesn't even have a cotangent complex. You know, it could be, like, massive. It's not, you know. I don't want to erase that. So I need at least one more example. So I asked for a little patience in formulating this example. So I need to back up for a second and talk about Yes. An algebraic group, classically an algebraic group is a functor from commutative rings to groups that satisfy some conditions. So here I've set it up in the exact same way, except, you know, commutative rings are replaced by infinity algebras and groups are replaced by loop spaces. And I just said, who cares about the conditions? I don't need them right now.
Okay, for every ring you have an algebraic group GLN over R.
Yes.
But you also have the algebraic group GLN, which is an algebraic group.
No, but that's just GLN of K, the ground. Yeah, right.
Yeah, as an algebraic group.
Yes.
Yeah. As an algebraic group.
Yeah, it fits here, yes. You know, I apologize for the poverty of my presentation. All right, so moving on. My last example, so clearly, like, I could get an algebraic group when I just kind of, like, had something that made sense to base change. And so I could take automorphisms of it. So that last thing will be something that I obtained from A. And so this is my last example, G. And so now I'm going to need even more patience to say maybe what this script B N is. Okay, so going backwards in time, so back up, I want to talk about enriched categories briefly. So if C is just a category, then I can talk about, which is, let's say, a monoidal category. Then I can talk about algebras in C. So these are just monoids with respect to this monoidal structure. But I can also talk about categories enriched in C. And given an algebra in C, so these are enriched categories which have, you know, mapping spaces, and these spaces are objects of C. Categories which are enriched in C. Let me write this. And so I have a way, let me call this script B, given an algebra, of getting a category enriched in C, which is just say, if my algebra is A, then I just consider the category that has a single object, and the morphisms from that object to itself are A. So let me call this BA. Now, if the category just has one object, then it seems like these are almost the same thing. To have a category with a single object and to have an algebra seem like almost identical notions. However, there's a little difference let's illustrate this small amount of difference between algebras and categories with a single object in a really basic example. So let's say where C is sets or spaces. Let's let it be spaces. So C is spaces, so now here I have, I have, let's say, topological monoids, And now I have spaces, categories, which are enriched in spaces. Let's call this B. And now I want to think, if I have two topological monoids, M and M prime, I want to think about what's the difference between considering maps of topological monoids from M to M prime and the difference between mapping the category with a single object to the category with a single object. Are these two things the same or are they different? Well, they're a little bit different because here natural transformations give you homotopies. And here you don't have anything like natural transformations. So so pi zero of this thing is equal to this, pi zero of this, but now I also have to quotient out my conjugation in M prime. Because if you think about what a homotopy is in sort of categories, well, one example comes from natural transformations, and here natural transformations are given by conjugation by an invertible element. Let me call this GL1. Conjugation by an invertible element of M prime. So these things are really close, but there's this key, this fundamental difference. But what does make it the same is if I now note that this functor B factors through an intermediate category, which is categories that have a distinguished object. So even though these categories only had one object, that object was not distinguished. So I could instead, let me switch back to C, consider that this functor B factored through categories enriched in C that have a distinguished object. So it's categories under this distinguished object. And then I can forget the object. And then just take categories enriched in C. And now this functor right here, this is full. Because these extra natural transformations go away when I say that they have to fix the one object coming in. And now it makes sense, this is a forgetful functor, so it makes sense that maps between things are not exactly the same. So this is the story. So now let's just do it in my purposes, and now instead, and now just say infinity categories instead of, or let me say one more thing. So in other words, we can compute, if we want to compute maps between algebras, we can compute them in the category of these categories, but it's a mapping thing. So if I consider categories under one between, let's say, Bn of A. B of, say, M, B of M prime. Well, this, just by a general definition of sort of mapping under, of mapping objects and under categories, this is given by a pullback, where I now, let's say, fix a distinguished object, the unit object. I just consider all maps here from B, M to B M prime. And then down here, I have maps. I allow the composition, and I have maps from 1 into the M prime. And so this is the same as maps of algebras from M to M prime. And so this is computed as a pullback. It sits in this pullback diagram right here. So I can compute this. I can compute maps in here in this category. I just need to compute all of these things and then consider the fiber over this distinguished map from 1 into Bm prime. Okay, so that's good, I think. So maybe just a quick word to identify what this thing right here is. So in the case where C was topological monoids, this thing right here, I'll leave it to you to check, is the classifying space of B of GL1 of M prime. So if you want to think about what the space of maps from the trivial category, just the unit category, into B M prime is, well, this is what you get right there. So in other words, the fiber, if I want to think about the fiber of this map is GL1. Of M prime. So GL1 of M prime, in other words, acts on this right here, and if you quotient, you get this. All right. So now, all this works just as well in the theory of enriched infinity categories. So let me just say, and the same for enriched infinity categories. So if you have C, some monoidal infinity category, you want to think about things enriched. Well, this is true, it is true also. Unfortunately, it is hard to find a definition of an enriched infinity category. but luckily, I'm sure that someone's going to write one up soon, and at least one person who's bailing me out on this point is David Gettner. So David has a couple notions of an enriched infinity category, so he can prove all the things that I want. So that's good for me. Hopefully it's very believable. Okay. So now I want you to recall from earlier. So now that we have this great notion and this way of computing massive algebras, recall from earlier that EN algebras in something was equivalent to E1 algebras in that thing N times. This was N. And so I can now, so I've given myself this this B from algebras in something, let me call it D. Let me write E1 algebras now to signify that everything is in homotopy theory. Oh no, this is invisible to some of you. If I have D, let me call it now because it's going to change. I have something to infinity categories enriched in D that satisfies this sort of fullness if I consider that it sort of maps under the unit object. It's full. And now that means that I can do this N times. See, I can to first do it once to get an E n minus 1 algebra or an E1 algebra n minus 1 times. To get a category enriched in E n minus 1 algebras in C. So do that once. And now I can do it a whole bunch of other times to get a category enriched in a whole bunch of other things n times back to C. So I have this composite functor where I did B n different times. And so that's the thing that I want to consider. So I can complete my example now of my third derived algebraic group. I'll add that note that that maps of EN algebras now, I can between two, let's say A and C, I can compute as a homotopy pullback between maps from this enriched category, these enriched categories, now down to maps from one into EN of C. And then I consider the unit of C, and this fits inside a homotopy pullback. So from the fact that it was true for algebras, and I could iterate, so now I have a way of describing maps of EN algebras in terms of these maps of higher categories. Okay. All right. So this is good for me. For us, and so now I can complete the final example of my third derived algebraic group, and now this will just be automorphisms of BN of A. So what does that mean? It means that I can take E infinity algebras, and I get a map to loop spaces, and given any R, I map this to, again, maps from Bn of R tensor A to Bn of R tensor A, which are maps, which are equivalences, and which are maps of higher categories, these sort of multiply enriched categories, finally at the end enriched in R modules. Okay, so this is R, Bn of A. So, oh, let me add, sorry, one remark. Back up to this picture about this homotopy pullback, let me just note that this space right here, similarly to the case of spaces, is the n-fold classifying space of BGL1 of C. And so the fiber of this is Bn minus 1 of GL1 of C. So in other words, I have a homotopy fiber sequence. It goes from Bn minus 1 of GL1 of C to maps of En algebras to maps of higher categories. So this thing right here should start to look a little bit familiar. Or at least I've got that n shift of n minus 1 right there and no shift there. So it's a little bit familiar. No, no, there's no slash. If there was the one slash, then this would be the same as ought A. So there's no, not under one. I freed it up, liberated it from the trivial category, mapping to it. Okay. Well, it's just, you mean the definition of enriched infinity category? I just iterated the definition n times. So if it was spaces, I would get infinity n categories, if C was spaces. So this is just something which is like an infinity n category with a little bit more structure. At the top, when you go up to Hams between n morphisms, there's a mapping object which is an object of R modules. Okay. So this fiber sequence right here immediately implies something about about our derived algebraic groups. So corollary of that thing that's underlined in green is there is a fiber sequence of derived algebraic groups which goes Bn minus 1 of the units of A mapping to automorphisms of A mapping to automorphisms of Bn of A. So note that if I look at the, so let A equals C in this case, so proof. First fiber sequence of functors, fiber sequences, it's a fiber sequence if it's a fiber sequence of spaces for every input. So, you know, you can just vary the coefficients by base change. So I just need to prove it for those spaces. So if set A equals C, and then in the middle and on the right-hand side, only look at the ones which are homotopy equivalences. And so then you see that there's a homotopy fiber sequence let me just write odd A of K, in other words, the underlying space when I evaluated K to odd Bn of A, evaluated K, so the underlying space. So that's what you get in that case for C equals A, and only looking at the equivalences there when you look over here. So clearly, I've checked it on spaces, and I can just base change to obtain it for every input, just applying that. So check. So this is great. So now I have a sequence of derived algebraic groups. It looks good. Just take their Lie algebras and then see what they are. So So now, how do you take the how do you take the tangent complex of a derived algebraic group? Well, so I'll have to say this a little quicker than I intended. So from functors, consider that are equipped with a point. So if you have a space-valued functor, say functors from E infinity algebras to spaces with a distinguished point. So now I want to consider the construction of a tangent complex. So the tangent complex at that point. So let's say I have some f in here, and so there's a map from a point to f. In other words, there's a map from what we might call spec k, which is the point. In other words, it assigns the point to every single object. In here, let's call this E. And now I want to extract a spectrum from this. So one way to do it, so let's define a spectrum, P of F. And so let's say that the n space of this spectrum, well, this is going to sit in a homotopy pullback diagram. The point here, this will be the homotopy fiber. If I evaluate f on the direct sum of k and k suspended n times, if I take the split square zero extension, and then I consider the projection map to f of k, where I forget about that factor, so this has a distinguished point, which was E, and now I take the homotopy fiber of that, and that'll be the nth space of the spectrum. And so now I need to impose with a small condition that it preserves certain homotopy pullback diagrams. So just a few, just involving like trivial modules and stuff. A very, very small condition. And so with this small condition, these spaces assemble into a spectrum. So this makes the collection T point F of N and omega spectrum. And so a slightly fancier version makes it into a K module, but we don't have time. So let's tie this up. So we have two. So there are two pretty easy things now, pretty easy. So let's call this a proposition. It's pretty easy. If I take the tangent space at the natural identity element of aught A, I get the tangent complex of A. So you should just think of this in analogy. If I had a manifold, and I take the diffeomorphisms of that manifold, M, then what does this give me? This gives me vector fields on M. So this is just an analog and derived algebraic geometry of this very familiar fact. It's not hard. So another pretty easy statement is that if I take the tangent space at the identity of Bn minus 1 of the units of A, I get A shifted, suspended n minus 1 times. And so this is, again, something very familiar because we know that just from classical algebra, that T of the units of A is equal to A equipped with the commutator product when A is an associative algebra. So this is just saying that there's an equivalent statement for E in algebras. And then we have a thing which is kind of harder, and which I guess I won't be able to explain in too much detail, which is if you take the tangent complex of aught of Bn of A, then you get suspended n times the En Hochschild cohomology of A. So that is the Lie algebra of this automorphism, of this group of automorphisms. So if you that now passing to the tangent complex sends fiber sequences to of space value functors to fiber sequences of spectra. And so these two results imply the original theorem. Which was there was a fiber sequence these things. I didn't say anything about the Lie algebra structure that you get here, but you can take care of that too. In fact, there's better versions of pretty much everything I said. All right, so I'll quit there. Thank you for your attention. This is an algebra over that operator. It has a little more structure. Well, so there's more structure because it also has a restricted structure. So it's a spectrum level analog of being a restricted Lie algebra. So it has that kind of structure also. But actually, several of these pieces have more structure in that, this thing right here, if I don't shift by n, is an En plus 1 algebra. That's the sort of higher dimensional thing. But the Lie algebra of automorph. Anyhow, so there are better statements also, but I said what I could in the time allotted. I'm sure Jacob could have written it when he wrote a whole bunch of other stuff. He just didn't. And David Geppner has a preprint that I've seen that has a whole bunch of it, so he knows how to do it. And my guess is, other people sort of know how to set things up. It's like easy if the thing's Cartesian, then you just use the usual Siegel, setup. But here you need, the monoidal structure on E1 algebras is not Cartesian at all. So it's like absolutely not good enough. You need some sort of extra idea. So probably a lot of people know how to set that up, but it's, so far as I know, not presently in literature, but I'm leaning on David, so hopefully it will be soon. Let me just say that one part of the structure. So there are these. Let's denote this as the. So if this is a Lie algebra, and so this will denote the derived thing. Then I have maps like this, but I also have a norm map like this, tensor N, where this is now the homotopy invariance. And there's the data of factorizations like this. I don't know how to say it, or at least I haven't really thought about how to say it for totally general operad, but one way you can define it, a pretty good definition just for the case of the Lie, is that there are maps maps of En algebras like this, En, En shifted by 1 minus n, maps to En plus 1 shifted by minus n. So there are these wrong-way maps of the En operads. Did I get it right? Yes. And so you can consider restriction maps along this in the case of algebras and take the inverse limit. If you just do it at the case of algebras, I would just do it at the case of operads, then you get the Lie operad. So this derived derivatives of the identity operad is this thing. But if you do it for the categories of algebras, that doesn't commute. And so the inverse limit of En non-unital En algebras with a shift as n tends goes to infinity is this sort of category of derived restricted Lie algebras. And so there's a difference. It's that failure to commute between what happens at the operad and what happens at the category, that it gives you that extra structure right here. They're the same for En because of the special thing that these spaces are finite and free. So the restricted adjectives means nothing for En, but it does at the end of the day.
One question? And let's thank John again.